Welcome to Season 4 of Spin is a Four-Letter Word, Maroon's Mark. I'm John Maroon. As we celebrate 20 years of Maroon PR, this season is a toast to the relationships, risks, and lessons that shaped our journey. In each episode, I connect with a special guest who's left their mark on me, our agency, or our industry, offering real-world perspective for building what lasts. Grab a drink. Cheers to 20 years. Hey, everybody, it's John Maroon. Thank you again for tuning in to Spin is a Four-Letter Word, the Maroon PR podcast. As you know, this year is Maroon's mark. We're going to talk to 20 people in our industry, 20 very significant people, either to meet personally or in our industry or both. And today's no exception. My very good friend, very old friend, Pat Courtney, who is the Chief Communications Officer at Major League Baseball, is joining us. Pat, welcome to the show. Thank you for taking a few minutes of your time.
Oh, I'm happy to do it, John. Great to see you.
Yeah, great to see you too. Pat, I mean, you and I go back to the 80s.
Yeah.
Interns at MLB and all that craziness, which is such a great memory. But give our viewers and listeners a little bit of an idea of your career journey and your role at MLB over the years and where you're at today.
Sure. So, you know, I went to the University of Richmond, and, you know, when I was there, I was an economics and sociology major. there weren't sports programs there. I was always, I played a lot of sports, and I was just a huge consumer of sports and really was thinking I was going to go on this business track, Wall Street, not even knowing what that meant, right? And then, you know, one of my really good friend's brothers was in the middle of a graduate school and grabbed me and in business school. And he said, what do you want to do? I told him this. And he's like, look, my advice for you is you're going to be working your entire life. You know, find something that you love doing, you know. And as we explored that, he's like, tell me something you love, you know. And I was like, I love sports. And he's like, well, then find something in it. And you know, this was my junior year in college. And from that point on, it really sparked something in me and to think I gotta see what I can do. And, you know, I winded up finding an internship with a sports agent who represented one NFL player. And then it branched out from that into, you know, finding when I graduated, trying to find internships. And I don't know what your internship journey was like when you got out of school, but I was writing letters to anybody that touched sports, right? And just, I spent months doing that, getting rejection letters and all that. But in the process, yeah, you know, winded up getting a job with our friend Jeff Idelson with the Yankees. And when I look back on it, I didn't really have any skills, you know, and Jeff taught me a ton of skills.
No, he's great. It's funny. It's funny you mentioned that. Like, I got very lucky because my mom directed. I was failing in college. I was a Fairleigh Dickinson. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And my mom remembered we visited St. John's, and you know, they had a sports management program. She's like, okay, dummy, like, try that because maybe that'll spur something. And a guy there named Bernie Biglane was a very well connected. Remember Bernie?
Oh, sure. Bernie
placed me in this internship with our friend Jim Small.
Yeah.
And that's how that started. So it was the St. John's connection and all that stuff. But but please go ahead. So you got the internship.
Yeah. So you know, and I got the internship with Jeff, and it's funny, probably like you, what you don't realize is those relationships, looking back on it, were everything, right? You know, Brian Cashman was there. He's, you know, who's, you know, GM John Rico, you know, who is now has a higher up position with the Mets, was an intern with me. And, you know, John and I, and there was a third intern there. We really just took it like we couldn't believe we were at the New York Yankees. And we're like, whatever you want us to do, we'll do, you know. And with that kind of attitude, I thought it was so fortunate to be doing that stuff. And I think through that, we wound up getting more and more opportunities with different groups. We got to know the whole organization, you know, because we even threw silly things like handing clips out and stuff. I knew everybody in the place, you know, real, and some of them didn't know each other as well, right?
It's funny you mentioned the clips thing, Pat. I remember that was a primary job, like for an intern, we print off newspaper clippings and you hand them out. But you're right, that's how you meet everybody.
100%.
The willingness to do that sort of stuff and the eagerness to do it leads to so much.
And what's funny, John, you probably felt the same way. Just by handing out those clips, you realize people in different groups, they're not as in touch with the news. So at that point in time, without the internet and all that, right, you were their sort of source of information. So they would ask you different things. I'm looking back on it, you know, I'm just out of college, you know, I've got like, you know, the CFO asking me like, hey, you know, what were people working on today? Blah, blah, blah. So anyway, so I did that internship. And then at the end of the year, that was over. Jeff asked me to come down to spring training the following year with the Yankees. And then the name Jim Small comes up. You know, he was your guy. And what happened was there was an entry level position here at MLB under Jim. And I interviewed for that and was really fortunate to get that job. And, you know, just winded up doing a variety of different roles within the communications department, but really with that same sort of attitude. I was like, I everything about it I found enjoyable. Getting to to know the writers, getting to know people in the office, you know, being around the sport, working big events, being around you, like with Cal Ripken and all that, you know. I just, all of it, I just really soaked in and I just wanted to be, I wanted to be part of it, you know?
Yeah, it's such a blessing. And, you know, it's funny. I remember when I was so proud of myself for getting that internship and asked Jim Small, like, what set me apart? And to show you how times have changed, he said, well, you applied. Like, Nobody else was going after this thing. Maybe even though I was a thing,
right? Well, that's the thing, John, right? Like, do you know how many people, when I told you I did that writing thing?
Nobody knew that was a thing, right?
No one knew it, right? I'll tell you, I must have written to 30 different people here at MLB that responded to me, you know, and you were trying to find out, like, there wasn't a former, the RHR department was one person. It was Marianne Burns, right?
Yes.
You know, so it just was a different time. It was a small office and trying to find these opportunities, and you were just, you know, you were, it's funny because you're able to sort of carve your own path too.
Yeah. And so like fast forward, Pat, now like you were the right-hand guy for Commissioner Selig, and now you're very close, obviously, with Commissioner Manfred Newman well before he was commissioner. And
yeah.
And what does that role like day-to-day really look like for you?
Look, it's funny, you know, it can change on a dime, right? It can depend on what's in the news, what's going on, you know, like we were just talking about WBC before we got on. It can be initiatives that we're working on. It can be like ABS rollout. It can, you know, it's the thing I like about it the most is it's you don't ever really fully know. It can be a lot of different things, and you can be dealing with people that you never thought you'd be dealing with, right? And there's a planning piece to it, which is good. I think the thing that's changed the most probably since you and I got involved is just this immediate response phase to it, right? You and I had time when we first
met. Oh my gosh.
Right?
Different universe.
Right. I never felt this pressure. You know, if somebody was a nightly newspaper, a morning newspaper, you would still have hours. You know, now it's like, hey, what do you have to say? And if not, you know, we're moving on without you. And the story's been framed, right? So your ability to be able to quickly decipher information, you know, responses, things like that has really, really changed.
Tough for the journalists, too, I think, because now there's such a, you got to tweet it right away, or you
100%.
Put it on X, or you got to push it out on social or get it up. Even if you're not 100%, it's true, because if you don't, someone else is going to be. So it seems like there's a lot more like fake news out there by that design, right?
Right. And like, you know, and you've probably have to deal with this a lot as well, too. The difficult thing is when something goes out on social and is inaccurate, trying to change that and get the truth out. You know, oftentimes people think that you're not being truthful, or you're trying to change the narrative and all that. And, you know, there's things out there that can just be flat out wrong, you know, and that's the most challenging part.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question about AI, Pat, because it's taking over the universe, as we all know. And here at Maroon PR, you were trying to use it more and more. We're exploring ways to use Claude and ChatGPT and really use it to enhance what we're doing and whatnot. Obviously, the big one with MLB is with the umpires, right? We all see that coming in and whatnot. But from your perspective, day to day, is the team at MLB and is your team using it more on a day to day basis?
Not so far, John. I think, you know, it may be in terms of aggregating information and things like that. You know, like you and I talked about clips and things like that. Now there's ways that you can get information and things that are out there right away and condense it, right, to what the story is. I see it being used in other parts of our office, right, in terms of like data processing and things like that, and our statistics and all of that, right, where that obviously in the baseball operations front, you know, they're doing a ton on that stuff, right? And, you know, there's always, you deal with the fine line of like, when you have the information, how do you get the information to the people? And, you know, even in, you know, in game, you know, people using, right? How do you, if you're able to get stuff, how do you get it to players, things like that? So there's all sorts of uses to it that we have to deal with on a day-to-day basis. We haven't fully ingrained ourselves in on the communication side. I think, you know, one of the big things is in writing too. You know, I think it can be a cheat for it, but it also, there's something that doesn't seem authentic to it either, right?
For sure. Yeah. We always call hamburger helper, like you can use it to help you get started, but do not rely on it because it will come back at you.
It can, you know, you and I could go and look up a quick stat on some player or something, and that's what it says, and you repeat it publicly, and it turns out it's wrong, right? And that you have to be careful.
Yeah, for sure. I want to double back a little bit on something that you brought up earlier, that we were talking about how information gets out there so quickly these days and whatnot. But another thing that's changed a lot since I was in the game was the, I guess, for lack of a better word, the day-to-day need for the beat guys and the media from a team perspective. So you see a lot of teams now saying they have their own channels with massive followings. They have their own platforms, YouTube channels, social media platforms, their own website, their own reporters. So you're seeing them instead of like back in the day, you'd figure out, okay, who are we going to give the scoop to, or are we going to have a press conference? Now teams are telling their own stories. I mean, how much have you seen that change, and how much of a challenge do you think, or opportunity is that for organizations?
Yeah, I think you've sort of summed up. It's like all of the above, right?
Yeah.
I think that, you know, you and I came up in a traditional background, and I'm still, you know, I think the third party credibility of somebody else is something, you know, if we write a story or something, people are always going to question, like, well, that's their coming in house, right? So the third party credibility is always helpful, right? And drives towards. I think that where it's really helpful are in markets where they're, you know, we've gone from where there was, you know, 10, 20 reporters covering a team where there might be one or two, right? And it's a way to augment coverage where, you know, if people don't have a source in which to go to, they have one where they can get, you know, the basics, right?
Yeah.
And and like I know here for MLB.com, you know, for years, you know, people thought, but we didn't, you know, in terms of giving them a heads up on things. We want to give everybody equal footing on things when we put a press release out, and just because we've feared that, you know, the criticism of it, quite frankly, right? But I think as time goes along, is that people, the numbers have started following a lot of these club sites and stuff, and they also feel like it's a direct communication with their most loyal people, right? Yeah. So by doing that, they feel like, you know, they're building a relationship themselves. So there's a lot to that, but I think really where I sort of think is it's like a blend, right? You're trying to like cover everything, print media, social media, you know, your own, you know, you're trying to get it out to the masses.
Yeah. And I think the media relations piece, I worry about that sometimes. You know, I talk to young people that come and join us, they're interns, and they're not being taught media relations in school the way they used to be. It's much more about the social. It is still writing, which is great, but like I just see there's such value in that third party endorsement, as you alluded to earlier. And now you're seeing, going back to the AI piece, AI is drawing up down a lot of its information from earned media. So it's kind of getting a rebirth of sorts. So I hope that it's still a critical part of what we do in our storytelling, you know, is that earned paid media. And I'm glad to hear that it's still important to you. And I hope I hope younger people understand that.
Well, look, you and I probably benefit the most from the interpersonal relationships, right? I think that was somewhere where you and I
were taught that way.
Yeah. They were real relationships,
yeah.
Right? It was, you know, I always sort of thought, like, I always hated the word spin, right? Because spin to me...
That's why we name this spin as a four-letter word.
Right. Yeah, there you go. Right. Yeah, because it just, to me, that you might as well say liar, you know? Like, conveniently lie. I mean, like, I always felt like, look, especially with people you're dealing with on a day-to-day basis, it's okay if you don't tell them everything, right? Yeah. But you have to tell, what you're telling them has to be the truth.
Or else it's over.
It's over.
It only takes one time. Exactly. I always said that about journalists and athletes. You get one shot, man. Like,
absolutely.
If they start viewing you as untrustworthy.
Yeah, you're done. You're useless. You're done. Right. Yeah.
They get that you can't share everything all the time. They get that. But don't lie to them, right?
They respect it. I can't tell you the number of times I'm like, look, you know what? I just can't. I can't go into that. You know, nothing I can say on that. You know?
I agree, Pat. So, like, since you've been there, you've been there. How many years have you been in MLB?
I started in '92, so 32 years. Yeah.
Oh, amazing. And you know, there's been ebbs and flows with baseball and its like relationship with the public and whatnot. But baseball is at such a high right now in its popularity. Yeah. It's wild. Like, down here in Baltimore, people are losing their minds over the Orioles, which is awesome to see again. But it's popular everywhere. And I guess I'm asking, in this world with video games and this world with, you know, quick, the slow attention spans, I know the pitch clock helped. Like, what do you attribute that to? Like, when did this baseball resurgence, which is so great to see?
You know, I look back on a lot of it at the time. Commissioner Manfred was running, and when he was doing, you know, Commissioner Selig had been commissioner for more than 20 years, right? And when he was going through the process, it was one of the first times we really did a lot of fan polling and data, right? And in doing that, you found like what fans wanted, right? And it was you know, although it seemed probably seems elementary now, I remember one of the biggest things that came of that first study was learning about how do you become a fan. And it was either you play the game or you're taken to a game when you're young. And the chances of you being a fan, if you were did either of those things young, were astronomical, right? It's like, just get them there and they'll become a fan. So we focused a lot of time on that and on play, right? I think, you know, that sort of morphed into, you know, what do you want on the field? And on the field, you know, it was things like, you know, time of game, dead time, you know, where the pitch clock, things like that. And so there was this constant thing. You could sort of see what fans were saying loudly, right? And then focusing on that. And, you know, then we did things in the minor leagues and tested them out for years. So by the time it got to the majors, it wasn't as much trial and error then, right? So I think, and I'd be honest, you've been around the game forever too. You know, our fan base probably is the most reluctant to change. It's very personal for people. So I think getting a couple of wins under your belt on these areas, you know, allows you to do, you know, could you imagine you and I talking about ABS, you know, there's no chance, you know, and even coming into this week, even though we've been doing it for years in the minors, you still thought, well, we get to the majors now, well, this will tell. And it's been really fascinating to see a response to it, you know.
Well, it's a human element too. And like, where do we cut that off? And where is it?
Right.
It's a delicate dance, especially with a game so steeped in tradition, like no other.
Right. Exactly right. And, you know, and then there was fears of like, oh, well, does this take the framing catcher out and all that? And what you see is the catchers are vitally important in all of this, right? Yeah. So
it's really exciting.
Yeah. So, but it's been great to see, you know, WBC and, you know, we've very fortunate with such a phenomenal World Series last year. You know, pretty great story. I see all these great young players coming up, right? Everyone's talking about rookies right now. It's just, you know, sometimes you have positive momentum. Sometimes you have negative momentum. Yes. It's nice to get some positive.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the WBC, the World Baseball Classic, just become such a thing. I mean, it's so dynamic. I don't know if that was the vision out of the gate or if it was more like, hey, let's give this a shot and see. But boy, I mean, are you blown away by the...
Yeah.
And the idea of like guys leaving teams for 2 weeks in spring training, that was outrageous to some people. And the whole thing... And now look at it. It's just, you know, everybody lives for.
I was really fortunate in 2000. I was with the Olympic team that went to Australia.
Yeah.
And I was first assigned to Tommy Lasorda. And we went there for 6 weeks. We did, you know, 3 weeks of training, I think. And then the Olympics were a couple of weeks. And we wind up winning the gold medal there. But I remember the first time we got together, it was in San Diego. It was with a bunch of players. I didn't know any of them. You know, the only name I knew was CeCe, ironically. And that team came together and, you know, through Tommy, you know, talked all about, you know, USA and proud of your country and all of that. And going through that tournament, I mean, you lived and died with every pitch. So I had a pretty good feel after that Olympics. I was like, this is amazing, you know, and people in our office were really onto this concept. But like you said, there were just a lot of challenges in terms of getting players to be able to play and being interested in playing.
I couldn't agree more. Pat, I'm going to keep you a couple more minutes. I'll let you go. But I want to ask you a little bit about the risk of bringing up an uncomfortable subject. There's a little buzz right now about a potential work stoppage. We haven't had one in baseball in forever. How much does that occupy your time in terms of at least strategy or prep and Rob for those questions and that sort of thing?
No, I think like we've all been through it, and you know, unfortunately, in the past as well too, and we've had a good track record since what happened in 94. You know, we prepare for it and stuff. I think what we really try and do, honestly, John, is all the positive things we've been talking about is really kind. We have a season here to play, and we've got so many great stories to play. The labor stuff's the labor stuff. It's going to get figured out, right? And it's just really concentrate on the game and these players and sort of the moment, you know, and in time, you know, both sides work together, you know, and have an attitude of getting a deal done, right?
Yeah. And Pat, talking about the season and whatnot, I always love seeing the new ballparks just blow me away. And it's kind of cool what's happening here in Baltimore. We have an older ballpark, but this year the ownership group put a ton of money into Camden Yards with the desperately needed upgraded video board, the ribbon banders around the ballpark,
yeah.
And the Truist Club, which is what the old press box was. The press box finally got the kick.
Yes, you knew that was happening for a
waiting
long
forever
time, right?
For that, right?
Right.
But it's getting rave reviews. I mean, yeah. Between new parks and these, you're just seeing such a transformation. You saw it go from, you know, these cookie cutter, no entertainment, come watch a ball game to
right.
I mean, talk a little bit about what that impact's been.
Look, you saw it first, right, when you were in Cleveland, right? Yeah. You know, and obviously being in Baltimore as well. But it's amazing, you know, just the number of things where, you know, down in Atlanta for the All-Star game. And, you know, I never had to leave between the hotel, the ballpark and everything. You just stayed in the same area. It was unreal. So those sorts of things, I love to hear everything that's going on in Baltimore. We were out in San Francisco, you know, where you know, in Cleveland, they've changed that. There's all these now standing areas, bars out in the outfield, you know. Yeah, you have to listen back to what we were saying about fan polling, all that. You sort of have to listen to what your customer wants, right? And people it's different than when we first started. People don't necessarily want to sit there for all nine, and they want everything, right? They want to be able to come before the game. They want to do stuff after the game. They want to be able to be social with a group of people. So you have to give people the ops, and you also have to take care of your hardcore fan that wants nothing to change as well, too, right?
Yeah, no, so true. It's really interesting. I heard the new CEO of the PGA Tour said recently, he was quoted saying, sometimes it's not that complicated. Sometimes you got to listen to your fans and see what they want. And they really have a good, they'll give you positive, they'll give you really good impact and feedback. And
yeah,
came in with a bang and made some really positive changes for that sport.
100 Yeah, it's been interesting to watch him, right? Very conservative sport as well and everything. Yeah. And it feels like he's got some really good momentum.
Yeah. Well, Pat, you and I have worked together on a few different things over the years and several different things. I mean, obviously, 21-31,
yeah.
You know, you're a big part of that with us down in Baltimore, which was such a special moment. And you know, opening up Jacobs Field. And I think, were you in Cuba with us?
I was. I was just going to bring up
I think
Cuba
I have a picture of you and I on the field in Cuba. Yes. That was it.
That was
insane.
Incredible.
Nobody went there then, you know?
Right. I remember being scared when we got to Cuba.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's people coming and you got on this bus and you're with people all in rifles and you're like, what have I got myself into?
Yes, that was crazy. Of all the things in your career, of all the special things that you've been a part of, do you have a few of the, like, top memories for you?
You know what? You just hit a couple of them. You know, the Cuba thing, I remember just thinking, you know, in my wildest dreams, I never could have pictured being in Cuba. You know, you remember walking around the old cars. It felt like time had sat still for 30 years, right?
Yeah.
The Ripken one was so unbelievably and special. And he made it special, right? He like the way he you know, I got to meet him through you, and just the way he pulled everybody in on it was unbelievable. Yeah. Looking back, the Maguire Sosa stuff, you know, at the time,
yeah,
was incredible. More recently, I would tell you that first game at Field of Dreams.
Oh yeah, that was.
I'm telling you, like walking, we get to the field and we're pulling up and you see the cars like at the end of the movie and we're pulling up. You're like, oh my God, this is crazy. And then you walk through the corn to the stadium that was built in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, and then the stuff that Kevin Costner did and the players were walking through the outfield. So cool. Stuff. I mean, that was just, I remember sitting there like, this is one of the most amazing things I've seen. So this game, it's amazing, right? It's just, it comes along a thing that just blows your mind, you know?
Always. And last thing, I'm going to let you know, I would like to finish, like, what advice would you give to young people wanting to get into communications, whether it's sports or, you know, just in general, but want to get in, they like PR, they like the idea of it. Maybe it is a passion for sports. Like, what do you tell young people trying to break in?
I have a lot of people, I'm sure like you, that reach out, you know, about internships. We have a really good internship program here, and it's I think the biggest thing is to have some sort of idea what you want to get into, right? It's people I get a lot of, oh, I would like to intern with you guys, you know, and it's like, well, if you want to tell me, give me an idea, you know, if it's communications, is it licensing, is baseball operations, legal, whatever, you give me some concept of it. So that way you can learn some skills, because eventually you're going to have a skill set in order to work at some place full time. Right. So I think is to think like the person who grabbed me at that time and said, is like, get some sort of idea on what you want to do. Right. And then explore it. And the thing is you don't necessarily have to, if your ultimate goal is to get into sports, you can do things in and around sports that can give you that, you know, you can get as much or more experience working for an agency as you do for, you know, a league office.
And it can even set the stage up. I told young people, like, hey, look, agent, if you can do an agency and you start pitching stories about stuff that may be a little less sexy than the New York Yankees, you can sell, you can pitch anything and sell anything. So like
1,000%.
Yeah, I don't experience.
Yeah. I've gone from when I first started here and just hiring people that mainly had baseball backgrounds to now hiring people that have political backgrounds,
right?
Agency backgrounds and stuff. Just for exactly what you said, because they're used to pivoting all over the place on different topics. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if you're not careful and you work for a team for a long time, I tell this woman we just hired away from the Ravens. She's going to start in a few weeks. She's smart as it can be. Said the one thing that's a danger, and she recognized it, was that you have a built-in base of media covering you day to day. So if you're not careful, most people, good ones, are careful and they stretch themselves, you can fall in the trap of just servicing this built-in media base versus, hey, I want a story in a different outlet. I want to be bigger. I want to tell the story that nobody's thinking of. I'm not just worried about what's between the white lines.
Yeah. Exactly. And you know, and you see that. And that's the thing, is when people that have been in agencies, that's what they're used to, right? Yeah. They're used to going to a whole different set of media on depending on what that topic is.
And finding out what's interesting about a client that sometimes it's not as obvious as Aaron Judge, right?
Right.
Like, exactly. It's a little trickier. Yeah.
100%. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, listen, Pat, you know, I really appreciate you taking some time to do this. I know how busy you are, but I just want to let you know how much I value our relationship. And we always say here at Maroon PR, we drive growth through relationships. And you alluded to this when we were talking. The relationships we made during that time. We had some really fun times together. Carolyn and I were thinking back to these all-star games and these things, laughing as hard as I've ever laughed with you.
Absolutely.
And while learning and doing great work, I'm grateful for our friendship, and I'm grateful that you took some time.
Oh, John, I'm happy to do it, and I feel the same way. And look, I think what you said is true. Is you know, we both had a passion for what we were doing, but we like to have fun too, and that's okay, right? You want to have fun while you're doing this, you know?
Oh my God, that is for sure. Well, Pat Courtney, who is the Chief Communications Officer for Major League Baseball, thank you again for being on Spin as a Four-Letter Word. Maroon's Mark, we'll see you soon, my friend.
Hey, it's John Maroon again. Thank you for listening to Spin is a Four-Letter Word. And just a reminder, if you can, follow us on all the major social media platforms at Maroon PR. If you have an idea or suggestion, let us know what you think, and we'll see you soon.